It's the Bob McCowan Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download their online casino and sportsbook app today.
It's McCowan, it's Shannon, and it's a new week. And the Blue Jays are at home, believe it or not, for the first time this year after a 10-game road trip. And they come home with no optimism at all.
John. Well, you have no optimism.
Do you? Do you?
10 games on the road. They are so inconsistent, Bob. They are so inconsistent.
I think they're very consistent. They can't hit worth a damn, and their pitching is nearly as good as last year.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, there is not a good taste in anybody's mouth as opening day at the Rogers Center is upon us. It really is. It's Lewis, by the way, it's Castillo versus Barrios today, or tonight rather. It's for the opening day, and Barrios is probably only one of the bright lights of the team so far.
Sure, he is. When you think of it. He may be the only one.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Baseball season so far this year has. I'm starting to wonder though if remember 3 or 4 years ago, all we talked about was hitting home runs. There really seems to be a change in baseball, Bob. I think we're going back to hitting line drives.
The Toronto Blue Jays would just like to hit the ball. They really don't care where it goes. Just hit it. And they don't have anybody that can do that right now.
No,
a disappointing team in my view. And I do not like the way they're set up. I do not like the fact that they have second base and third base with no starter. No guy has taken that job.
Let's dig deeper into that. Let's talk about it with John Paul Morosi.
Good.
Who's coming on opening day in Toronto here on the McCowan Podcast. Morosi, Shannon, and McCowan after this.
Hi, this is Bob McCowan for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the Bet Rivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. Shannon and McCowan in Toronto. Our pal John Paul Morosi in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mr. Morosi, it's opening day in Toronto. The Jays are coming home after a 10-game road trip. They're 4-6. The attitude of the marketplace is not very positive today, I can tell you that. Any reason for concern?
Well, good morning, John and Bob. As always, always love our conversations. I do think when you look at this team, you were hoping to see more offensive consistency than you saw last year. The peaks and valleys were certainly a huge part of the Jays' story last year. And the big question was, will they make adjustments with a new offensive coordinator in Don Mattingly and a new overall hitting philosophy? Would they find a way to be more consistent against high-level pitching in 2024? And the answer so far is no. They still have the ability. I do believe that they have a chance to grow into being a better offensive club and a more consistent one. But I think the big question that Jays fans had entering this season was, against good ball clubs, are they going to hit more consistently than they did last year? And so far, I think we have to say 2024 looks a lot like 2023.
Well, maybe even worse, really, to tell you the truth. Now, they played three good teams, and they played on the road. So you have to take that into consideration. But They are hitting less than 200 as a team. That's horrible, right? So
right. And they right now, Bob, to your point, they rank in the bottom third of all major league teams in OPS, which of course involves their on-base percentage, slugging percentage. So it's not just the batting average, it's the overall production is in the lower third of the major leagues. And I think, Bob, it's putting to the test the thesis that we often talked about last year, which is they were an up and down offensive team, still with some ability and potential, but that they were carried last year to a postseason berth by their rotation, that their rotation is what got them to the playoffs. And that is putting a significant onus on the rotation to yet again be that consistent. And I think so far, you're even seeing the pitching now dip into the bottom half of the major leagues in terms of ERA. And again, to John's point earlier, they face very good competition. So they have already been tested against some of the best offensive clubs in the sport. And again, the results have been below average. If you've got a below average rotation and a below average overall starting pitching plan, and then the bullpen has been a little up and down too, and your lineup's going to be in the bottom third of overall offensive clubs, you're not going to win consistently. Now, it is early. All the games have been on the road. They've faced good competition. So all those data points are to be considered in context. But what we can say is this: if the trends that we have observed to this point continue over the long season, it's going to be hard for this team to make it back to the playoffs.
Well, if you take a look at the players that this general manager has acquired over the last 2 or 3 years, name one that has even decent offense. Name one.
George Springer.
Well, yeah, Springer is still, I think, to John's point, Springer is still going to be, should be, an above-average offensive player. Now, will he be worth every penny on his contract? That's a separate conversation. But he is still a good player. And I also think that Justin Turner, when given time and the proper role and the proper fit in this lineup, Turner is a really good bat-to-ball, run-producer, complementary player. The basic essence, though, of this team is unchanged. They will go as far as Guerrero and Bichette take them. There is no credible path for this team to be able to win a division or to be a 90 to 95 win team unless those two guys hit. Period. We can analyze it and dice it up in any way that you want. But Turner is a really good complementary player. Springer can be a catalyst and a table setter, but Springer is not going to be a 30 homer, 100 RBI guy with a 310 batting average. That's just not the kind of player he is right now. The kind of players that can carry this team are the two guys who are in their primes, and they have to do it or else the rest of the math is not going to work.
Like riding a roller coaster at the CNE right now, JP. It's not up and down. And the other thing is the three guys that are going to get a lot of starts in position play, Kiermaier, Varsho, IKF, they have been miserable at the plate. Miserable. Now, I wasn't expecting, Willie Mays at the plate, but they have to deliver some decent numbers at some point for this team to be competitive, don't you think?
They do. And again, you're exactly right, John. You look at the big picture of this team. One of two things at least has to be true. Either the big guys, and by that I mean Vlad and Bo, have to really produce and carry the team, or it's going to take a 1-9 depth approach. And clearly neither one of those two things is working right now, especially when the bottom half of the lineup, to your point, has not been terribly productive. So this, to me, gets to this next question, is if you've already remade the coaching staff and you've put a lot of thought into giving Don Mattingly a lot more latitude and space to plan the offense. And so you've already made the coaching adjustment. It's way too early in my mind to put a ton of pressure on the coaching staff and say, well, they've got to produce better results. You had your chance to adjust the coaching staff, and you did in the offseason. You had your chance to adjust the roster, which you did at least in some ways in the offseason. This
not
is
really. Not really. Come
well,
on.
But they brought back Kiermaier. They signed IKF. They declined to make a change with Varsho. They signed Turner. They made some changes. This is who you are. It is right. Way too early to talk about changing anything unless you believe that Orelvis Martinez is the answer and or you want to call up some guys in the minor leagues. Roden had a very good spring training. Is he someone that they believe is close enough? This is not the time to be talking about dramatic changes. This is who you are. And it's either going to be good enough or not good enough. I am someone that right now is very much against even contemplating big changes. You have to let this team settle in. And if anything, it does inform the way that you approach the potential of longer term contracts with either Vlad or Bo, because if it's not working now, when do you believe it's going to be working with this group? And if anything, it informs the way that you approach decisions to be made closer to the trade deadline, because at some point you may be forced with a decision. Again, it's not now. It is not now. But at some point down the line, several months from now, you may have to look at this roster and ask yourself a very serious question, which is, if this mix of players is not working now, and if it's not winning and competing now in the American League East, you probably have to contemplate larger scale changes, because
yes, you do. Yep.
Because this has been a constant theme. You've changed the coaching staff. You've changed the approach. You've changed the margins of the team. You brought in guys like Turner. You've committed more to guys like Springer. You brought Kiermaier back. The overall collective group, you've made some changes and decisions about. The two guys who are still there who have not been impacted are Vlad and Bo. They are still there being themselves. And if that doesn't work, then at that point later on this season, not now, I will stress, not now, but later on in the season, you have to take a really clear-eyed look at who you are as a club.
But before I ask you when now is now, because I will ask you about now, isn't there a chance now? Okay, I mean, we're talking about a team that lives and dies with its analytics, lives and dies with numbers. Isn't there a chance now that the sample size is big enough for Vlad Guerrero to think that this is the guy that he is, and he's not 47 home runs, and he's not 120 RBIs? Isn't there a chance of that?
Sure. Because I think, John, a lot of analysts around baseball have made the point that outside of the COVID years where the home ballpark was changing and they were playing in Buffalo and in different venues, that the numbers have been much closer to what you would expect from an average first baseman around the sport than a special one. And the gap between what an average first baseman is paid and what a special one is paid is massive. Mm-hmm. Even someone, let's take, for example, Anthony Rizzo, who in a lot of ways really hasn't ever been paid on a mega dollar deal the way that people expected him to get paid. And you look at he's had to almost go, if not one year at a time, 2 years at a time, he's been able to get a healthy AAV, but he has not been getting massive nine-figure deals the way that people maybe thought he was going to get, because the Yankees and the Cubs before them concluded that for a player who puts up those kinds of numbers, you can often find that production on a shorter-term deal, like, for example, the Giants have with Lamont Wade Jr. Look right at Lamont Wade Jr.'s numbers over the last year plus, or even going back to 2022, and compare them to Vlad, and ask yourself clearly, with clear eyes here, for what reason would you pay Vlad substantially more than the Giants are paying Lamont Wade Jr. Or you go back to a previous era of a player, Mitch Moreland. Mitch Moreland had a very good career, but you compare Moreland's numbers to Vlad's numbers the last couple of years and say, why do I pay Vlad special dollars when the numbers are not that dissimilar from what Mitch Moreland put together in a good career, but one that involved him having to constantly get paid year after year on shorter term deals. And that's where I am right now with Vlad. I'm not seeing enough production for me to say, oh my gosh, that's a quarter of a billion dollar player for the next 10 years. I just have not seen that level of production, and we'll have to see what ends up happening into the future. But I do not yet see that this is a player who merits a $250 million contract, a $300 million contract. The numbers just do not prove it, especially, John and Bob, when the production of the team does not merit it. If they had gone on runs to the ALCS in successive years to say, well, he's clearly a key cog on a team that has success in October, that's not the case either.
Well, we spent so much time talking about the shortstop and the first baseman as the keys to this team, and I don't dispute that they are. But really, the story in my mind is this GM has not – they started the season with no third baseman, right? And the guy that they wanted to put there can't hit, and they knew that. They started the season with no second baseman, nobody, a bunch of guys – named who, that they rotate in and out of the lineup. They have a catcher who's as slow as molasses and is a liability on the bases. And he's not hitting the way he did his rookie year, but he's a liability, in my opinion. They went out and made a big trade for a left fielder who can't hit. He's a 200 to 220 hitter, period. They brought in a center fielder who's older. I like him, but he hasn't got it anymore. And his defense is good, but he won't play 120 games. So you can't put him, you know, you can't factor that, or you have to factor that in. And the right fielder simply isn't hitting. I don't blame them for that, but, you know, you have too many ifs on this team. And there were ifs and spring training, and there were ifs during the offseason, and they did nothing about it, nothing positive. They didn't get any offense at all, and they traded away, as we all know, an all-star catcher for essentially for a left fielder who'd never done anything. And we don't talk much about it. We kind of take it for granted. That's the way it is, so. But this is a team that has inflicted punishment on itself.
Right, Bob. That's very fair to say. And I think on the trade front, which I do believe the Moreno-Gurriel trade for Varsho is as much a part of the story of this team
as
Vlad and Bo and their story. Because I will say this, and I want to be candid about it. At the time of the trade, I said, hey, I'm a big Varsho fan. I love his athleticism. I know he's a very good defender. They needed more left-handed hitting. I said, I understand why they made this trade. And in fact, at the time, I liked the trade. I did, personally.
Yep.
But to your point, Bob, one of the most important things that any organization does is evaluate their own players. and you need to know, what you've got. And I think very simply, in this particular case, and certainly we all watch this team and talk about this team, they needed to know what they were giving up. And it seems to me that that was a missed evaluation on the talent of Moreno and Gurriel that they were giving up. They gave up more than they thought they were giving up. And ultimately, that's the responsibility of the front office. You need to know players. And I think that was a miss. Now, on the positive side, Ernie Clement has been a bit of a revelation. He's been able to be effective for them. He can move around the diamond. That's a positive story. And I think at some point, that there needs to be credit given for him. Now, can he do it for 6 months? That's a separate conversation. We don't know that yet. But early on, Ernie Clement has helped to save this team. This is not a team, though, that should need to be saved by Ernie Clement. This is a team that should be good enough to stand on its own two feet. Right. And the final point before I send it back to John, what saved this team last year was that the rotation was not just good, but great. Gausman was great. Bassett was great. And at the start of this season, Gausman, again, he had an injury issue in spring training. He has struggled. Bassett has been more hittable than he was really at any point in time last year. And if Gausman and Bassett are ordinary for a period of time, this team's in trouble, because what made them special last year was that the two of them were great. And it's not fair to expect starting pitchers to be great every single time out into perpetuity. And there was going to come a time where Gausman and Bassett came back down to earth a little bit. It's unfortunate timing that it happened all at the same time at the beginning of the season. And whenever they came back down to earth, they need the lineup to help paper over some of those struggles. And so far, John, it simply isn't happening.
They're also the one thing that you mentioned Clement, and it's a fair comment, but this appears to be a roster of tons of Clements. This appears to be a roster of, you know, jacks of all trade and masters of none. You know, when you look at Biggio, when you look at Schneider, when you look at Clement, there's a ton of guys that can play all over the infield, can every once in a while play in the outfield like Biggio did yesterday, but they don't have a real specialty. I throw IKF into that too. There's all these guys that can play versatile positions, but I'm not sure. Is that the right approach at a key point when you're looking for a strong second baseman, a strong third
baseman?
Well,
it's a fair point, John. And I think what I would tell you is this, and this is where I like to bring in my perspective from having seen different teams already this year, is that you look at teams that win consistently. Look, for example, at the Orioles and how many, and they're so good, so deep on their position players that Jackson Holliday didn't make the team. And they've got guys who play every day. Right. Look at the Braves, the key to their success. Look how many players on that Braves team by the end of the year have 500 plate appearances. And you look at their cornerstones.
Well, that's a real good point. Yep, real
Riley
good
at third. Look at Acuna, how often he plays. Arcia's become a great player over at shortstop. They acquire players. It's interesting. Last year at the trade deadline, they acquired Nicky Lopez, really good, versatile player, tremendous bench guy, who's a really good complementary player on a good team. And what people around the industry said to me was, love the pickup, love the player. He's a pro's pro. He's rarely going to see the field because of how often their guys play. Look at the Phillies, a team that went to the playoffs and went to the NLCS last year. Harper, even when he was hurt, played every day. Real Muto rarely takes a day off. Castellanos has some flaws in his game, but he plays every day. Turner plays every day. Look around the diamond. That's a team with dudes that play every single day. Look at the Dodgers. For the most part, they do switch out some platoons, but obviously Mookie, Otani, Freeman, Smith, Muncie, there are their guys every single day. They are the tent poles of the organization. And it's no accident that when teams are good, when they're in the playoffs all the time, it's because their group is a consistent, cohesive unit every single day, reliably, and they play good defense, and they're in the lineup, and they post. And I just think, to your point, John, this Jays team, there's too many moving parts. The only way that all the moving parts work is if the big guys hit, and so far they haven't. And so what you've got is, You're looking, where is my consistency? Where do I know what I'm going to get? And there's just not enough reliability right now in this lineup.
Look, it's opening day.
I would say grew up, but when the Blue Jays were winning championships, you knew who the starting lineup was going to be before you got to the ballpark. You knew who was going to play and where they were going to hit. It was the same every day. Now, tonight, the Blue Jays play their home opener. Who's going to start? Name me their eight starters. You have no idea. No idea. Probably the catcher, you could do that. Third base, who knows? Shortstop, okay. Second base, no idea. First base, okay. Left field, no idea. Center field, no idea. Right field, probably. So you got four positions out of nine or out of eight where you know who the starter is going to be. You don't know how they're going to perform, but you know who's going to play. That's not enough. You've got to have a lineup that you are confident in every day, right?
Right. And Bob, I think that the important thing too is we have to evaluate all these things in context. And constantly, especially in baseball, I realize the schedules become more balanced, but you're still competing against your division. Mm-hmm. And so you look at the American League East right now and look at the New York Yankees with all the power they've got now. And Stanton's been hitting, certainly had a big home run over the weekend against the Jays. They've got Judge, they've got Soto. They've got, I think, very good pitching so far this season. Boston has surprised everybody. Now, Boston's schedule has been a little bit easy to begin the year. We'll see how they do this week against Baltimore. But you start comparing yourself to Boston and asking yourself, where are the Jays better than the Red Sox? Where are the Jays better than the Rays? These are all very important questions. And you compare yourself to the standard of the rest of the division. I see the Jays right now as being a middle of the division club in terms of their ability to compete. There are days when things are clicking and they'll be able to beat anybody. But the point is, so what we've seen so far this season is they can lose to anybody too. And that, especially in a division this rugged, typically puts you right in the middle.
Not only lose, but lose real bad. That's when this team loses, it is a disaster. We got to take a break. John Paul Morosi in Ann Arbor, Michigan, McCowan and Shannon in Toronto on the McCowan Podcast. So, John, you were talking about it's early and you were talking about when is now. I got to ask you, when is now now? And what I mean by that is when, and I give 4-6 is the record right now for Toronto. When should we start worrying? Do you have any guess at that?
Interesting question. I think so far right now it's too early to worry. It is not too early to make observations about where the team is going. And so the observations I'm making here are noted and where we're at and what we're seeing. I think they're all fair. It's all real. The observations early. I would say to worry, to make changes, you need to go more into May before you really say that it's something that's worth worrying about or making adjustments over. You recall when they made a change with Charlie Montoyo, that was well into the season when they made that choice. Mm-hmm. That was a while ago, certainly, and that was deep into the year. I think that you have to let about a quarter of the schedule play out before you're saying, okay, we can start to make some real judgments on how things are going. Again, observations, I'm all about making observations early. You have to. These games count. These games can cost playoff berths early on in the season. So I'm all about making observations. But in terms of making changes, it's much later. But I will say this. If this team is around 500 in June and they're middle of the division, again, bookmark this. We'll come back to it in June if it ends up being the case. If they're a 500 team in June, they need to seriously think about trading Bichette or Vlad. They have to. There's no way that you can keep rolling it forward and look at a team and say we're a special team, we're competing for a playoff berth, etc. If you're an average team, if you're an average team in June, and this is one of your years where it's all been pointing to this year, an average season for the Jays means something different than an average season for Baltimore, let's say, because the arrow is pointing upward for that team in Baltimore. They're only going to get better because their Vlads and their Bos are still arriving. This is just the start of it for them. If they're in a mediocre year, there is no need for them to panic because their internal improvements will help them out. They're going to get better with the passage of time. I am not sure with the Jays that they're going to get better with the passage of time. In fact, once they get to June of this year, because of where their club is and how much money they've already spent and the personnel they've got, they are who they are. And if who they are by June is not a good over 500 team that's really pointing in the right direction, it probably is time to make some changes. Wow. That's just the reality of where they're at.
The change you'd have to make in that scenario is Vladdy. But let's say Vladdy's hitting 200, which is not unreasonable the way it's going so far. What can you expect to get for him?
It's a great question. That you'd have to look at a team that either has some personnel in place that he fits well with, or that has a very clear need at that position. And
but is some team going to give you a star player?
A star? Probably not. You're probably going to have to get more unproven prospects. Let's take, for example, one team I'd point out, honestly, is the one that the Jays are facing this week here at home, Seattle. They have needed one more bat. They have the pitching. In some ways, they mirror what the makeup of the Jays roster has been. But they have pitching to move and a good farm system. They are a team that I think fits well from a standpoint of the need and the fit. Again, if the price point works, but they have needed one more bat. And I could see young pitching from Seattle making sense, again, theoretically, in a deal with Toronto if they get to that point later on. But you're not going to get George Kirby for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You're not going to get Logan Gilbert for him either. It's going to have to be one of their younger guys. You're not going to get from a contending team a superstar ace pitcher right now for a year and a half of Vlad. You're not going to get that in my opinion. And I think too, we go back and it's not exactly the same situation, but there are some similarities. Think back to the Josh Donaldson talks and all the times that the three of us talked about him before he moved on from the Jays. They missed their window to move him. They didn't really find a way to sign him long-term. It wasn't really the right fit and the right timing there. And the time of trading him never really lined up because the production wasn't quite there. The injuries happened and it never really worked in terms of being able to maximize his value. They missed the window and they have to hope that whether it's with Vlad or with Bo, that they don't miss the window with them too. They've got to hit well enough. It's sort of a darned if you do, darned if you don't, which is why I'm telling you, if they're hitting well, they're probably hitting well enough that it's a quality ball club and you're not going to trade them. If they don't hit well, the team probably struggles and then you're in a selling position, but you look at it and say, what can I get for a struggling Guerrero or a struggling Bichette? And those are very difficult decisions to make.
Yep. The other challenge though, John, the way you're talking is like this team is not a 95 win team. It's not. I'm not convinced. I think it's an 81 win team. I think it's a 500 team. And I can only imagine sitting in the boardroom with that group of management people. They've done a huge renovation in the ballpark. They have started to charge a lot of money for tickets in certain areas of the, and they have sold the world in Canada that Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette are stars. I'm not sure that they can afford in so many ways a rebuild at this point. I'm not. And yet they're not good enough. And that's the oxymoron in this situation. We're not good enough. I mean, go to the playoffs and lose two more games again. For the third year in a row, that would be unacceptable at this point.
Right. No, you're fair. And that's, I think that to me, John, that I look at this and say, and you would both have better insight in this than I would. What do the fans want here? Do the fans, if I'm going to invest my money in going down to it, to a night at the ballpark, to your point, it's beautiful renovations. They've done everything the right way in terms of developing the ballpark. I think they deserve an immense amount of credit for that. So the experience there, are you going because it's almost an all new Rogers Center? Are you going because you want to see Vlad and Bo, or are you going because you want to see a competitive product on the field? There's these different competing ideas, and you're right. It would look a little odd if first year of a renovation, there's new higher ticket prices, And then halfway through the year, they trade a superstar or two. And listen, Jays fans are smart. Canadian baseball fans are smart. They know what we're talking about here. They know what we've seen in the last couple of playoffs. They know what the state of the roster is. And they also know that if they're paying their money to see Vlad and Bo play, but they're not having great years and the team's not going anywhere, does that math work out? I mean, it is a great question. And it's also a great question to where the front office and the management group and ownership are saying, what do our fans want? What right. do they want to see? And what will they pay for? That's the other dynamic of all this. And I think it's a great insight, John, to where if this was a more in isolation year where it's a take a different ball club, it's the San Francisco Giants who have made some investments and they put some stars in the field. If they struggle, their next plan, their strategy will be different from the Jays in year one of a dramatic renovation. And listen, we all know this strategically. I think, by the way, it was the right decision. If you're Mark Shapiro, if you're Blue Jays ownership, that you sync up the renovations to roll out in a year when you're supposed to be good. This is the penultimate year of Vlad and Bo before hitting free agency. You're supposed to have a good team. This team is supposed to be not just good, but great, maybe, or at least yeah. very good. And it's supposed to be fun, star-laden, energetic, interesting, superstars, guys you want to watch play. We'll see. Again, 10 games in is way too early to start saying that it's been a miss. I mean, it's way too early for that. But it's important to be real about this, that if this year doesn't work out, what happens next? And I think there's a whole lot of pressure on a lot of people to make yeah. it work.
Can we change the subject a bit?
Sure.
We saw Ohtani for a half a dozen years or so in California, and we heard nothing. There was no story about Ohtani in any regard, except that he was an extraordinary baseball player. He's been with the Dodgers, and now there's a second story. It's not a big one, but it's a story about him hitting the first home run for a Dodgers, or as a Dodger, and then the issue about the baseball. Is this because people are more focused on him, media is more focused on him, or is there something funny going on?
You know, Bob, it's a great question. I've been around the Dodgers a fair amount the last week or 10 days. I've seen them play three times. I do think that there is more attention on him now than there has ever been. Obviously, sure. to your point, the story about the alleged payments made to the alleged illegal bookmaker and the involvement of his former interpreter in that story, and then now the one about the baseball where certainly it appears that some misleading information was given about whether or not Ohtani actually met the fan. He did not meet the fan. So now there's this question of what's going to happen next and how are they going to make it better and clean up the public relations aspect of all of it, while, of course, the investigation into the payments made to the alleged illegal bookmaker continues. It's certainly a lot of noise in a very short mm-hmm. amount of time. I do think that what I will say, broadly speaking, is this. Ohtani has been used to controlling the narratives around him, where they were almost always positive and they were almost always within his own control. The investigation obviously is not under his control. It's being done by the federal government. There's a separate one being done by MLB. That is out of his control. The misstep about saying that he had met the fan was within his control and also a mistake. I think that for a long time, he has been able to control his message, control his access. And now you've got more and more people wanting to hear from him. And he has to be on his game a little better in terms of what he's sharing publicly and the way in which he's disseminating his information. He maybe has to be a little more careful about his image than he's been. It's a very interesting question, John. And to me, there's a lot of media relations 101 to be given here to where it's become a bit of a distraction. And now they've played well enough to the point that it has not become an issue, but he's got a lot of guys on his team. I'll say this as I send it back to you, John. Clayton Kershaw, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman. They all play at a high level. They all represent and connect with people in the community. easily and in a very gracious way at a high level. He's going to need to learn from his teammates in this regard, because keeping everybody at a distance is not working right.
No, call it a $700 million target. That's what it is. You know, you do that, you put yourself in that position, people are going to start taking runs at you. We got 30 seconds, John. Are the Pirates for real? Seriously.
Oh, the Pirates are for real. I thought you were going to ask me if the Wings are going to make the playoffs. No, the Pirates.
Are the Wings making the playoffs?
I think they'll find a way to get in. I've got faith. Okay. They've got a couple of big matchups. Saturday against the Leafs is going to be massive. But I do think the Pirates are real. Jared Jones, young starter, strikes out 10 in his major league debut. They're in a very winnable division. I love the way the Buccos are playing right now.
Well, you're a good man. You're a good man, John Morosi. Thanks for coming on.
John, Bob, always love catching up with both of you. All the best for this special week there as they reopen Rogers Center this week in Toronto.
See you, John.
All the best.
John Morosi, Bob McCowan, John Shannon on the McCowan Podcast. Back after this. So, Bob, I sent you a short text last night.
I saw it.
It was basically... not very encouraging about Alec Manoah.
Not very encouraging. It was, you know, have him shot. That was one of the worst performances you could imagine.
So it was one and two-thirds innings, five hits, seven runs. His ERA was 32.4.
Yeah, well.
another black cloud hanging over the Toronto Blue Jays at this point. You know, and Morosi talked about the pitching, and the one thing he didn't mention too was last year, the fifth starter, Kikuchi, was really good too.
Sure, he was.
I mean, it wasn't just, it was everybody. Everybody in that rotation was spectacular.
Yep.
And that's playing Russian roulette when you think about it, if you're hoping that your rotation is going to carry you through.
Well, that's what I said all offseason, right, John?
Yep.
Be careful, because you're going to have injuries, and these guys cannot be as good as they were 2 years in a row. It's not likely.
No, you're right. No, it is not going. I mean, the whole concept that we're hearing it a lot right now in Toronto. Well, it's early. I don't like the trends.
It's not that early, John.
Well.
But the question is, what can you do?
Usually you wait 40 games, don't you, in baseball?
Well, usually, yes. You're right. And usually I endorse that. But I have no confidence in this team at all. But I have no idea what you can do to help it.
Yeah. Well, no, I think Morosi was right. Bichette and Guerrero have to take, both of them have to take this team on their back. And I mean, the question is, are they capable of doing it?
Well, that's, you know, both of them are good players, and both of them will come out of their slumps. But would you trade one of them? I don't think so. I don't.
You know what?
Not this season. I wouldn't.
It's early.
Maybe in the off season. But even then, you're not going to get a big return.
So here's another question.
Yep.
Would you allow this management team to make that trade?
No, I wouldn't. I'd make that change.
I think that's the other question that's going to start to permeate through a lot of stories if this team continues on this funk. I really do.
Yeah, I think this management team screwed up in the offseason. They didn't do what they should have done.
And well, focus on other free agents rather than Otani.
Well, maybe, or trade or whatever. How can you start the season with no second baseman, no third baseman? I don't know how you do that. Like, they didn't even make a decision, a bad decision. They made no decision. They've got three or four guys who can play those positions. Well, so what? You know, I can play there. You know.
Well, hold on now. Hold on. I don't like the way you move to your right.
Stop.
All right.
The point is, they don't have anybody.
It's a point, and it's a point well made. Robert, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. See you then.
Yes, sir. Thanks for listening or watching the McCowan Podcast.
It's the Bob McCowan Podcast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download their online casino and sportsbook app today.